Good evening. I think we can have almost a full house, so let's get started. It's a great pleasure to welcome all of you to this evening on the French presidential elections and legislative elections. It's obviously hugely topical and important, not just for those of us interested in French politics, but for those of us interested in European and indeed global politics. And I think it's not an exaggeration to say that these will be the most important elections of 2017. And in many ways, they're probably the ones that will then determine the outcome of the French presidential election, will probably determine the kind of narrative we have for 2017. We can imagine if Macron wins, we will have the sort of the backlash against populism, you know, populism of 2016 with Brexit and Trump, you know, the cosmopolitan liberal elite strikes back. Or if Le Pen wins, we'll have a very different narrative, which is, again, populism on the rise, the radical right winning. But you can see that perhaps even a close result with the very different outcomes can make us see the world of electoral politics and politics more generally, more different, very differently. And also, of course, this will have immense implications for Europe, for the European Union, I think. These elections are far more important for the future of the EU than the Brexit vote was, but that might be controversial. We'll see what the speakers have to say. So I am not the real expert here tonight, so I won't say anything else. The real expert, we're really delighted to have such a group of distinguished scholars and experts on European and French politics with us tonight who will cover these aspects of the elections and the broader implications. So, to my left here, our first speaker is Christian Lequesne from Sciences Po in Paris, professor of European and international politics, who is an expert on French politics and European politics more widely and published widely on that, and he will speak first. Then to his left, we have Françoise Boutchek, who is here in London, but also French. She is lecturer in European politics at Queen Mary University, the University of London. And last but not least, we have John Peet, who is political editor of The Economist. He was previously Brussels editor, and now he told me he just works on Brexit, but that's obviously also all-consuming, I imagine. And he will also give us the wider British and European perspective. So with no further ado, I give the word to... You know, in this Twitter world, I will be in big trouble if I don't mention that our hashtag for all of the Twitterati out here is LSE France.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Thank you for the invitations. Always a great pleasure for me to be back at LSE because I spend some time as a visiting professor here, so I'm glad to see former colleagues in the room. Well, let me start just saying that the state of uncertainty about this election is probably one of the highest in the Fifth Republic elections. I don't know what the London bookmakers are saying, but most of the analysts will tell you that we are absolutely unable to predict the outcome of this election. And when we are looking at the electorate, the citizens, they are themselves very uncertain, except those who have decided to vote for the far-left candidate, Mrs. Le Pen. The others hesitate a lot. You have only 51% of the people who thinks they are going to vote for the mainstream candidates who said they will. The others, well, they still hesitate. Another characteristic is that the two candidates of the mainstream parties, I mean the right-wing Républicain and the left-wing Socialist Party, well, they are not taking the lead in the polls. Currently, the two candidates who take the inside track are coming from outside the traditional parties. This is the liberal center-left candidate Emmanuel Macron, former Minister of Economy of the socialist government, who resigned a year ago. And this is the far-right candidate Marine Le Pen. So when you're looking at the polls, there are good chances that they compete at the second round of the presidential election, but this is not sure at all. The two candidates representing the mainstream parties, which have been appointed by primary election, Mr. Fillon for the Republican and Mr. Hamon for the Socialist, well, they still have a possibility to be at the second round, but it seems to be very difficult for both of them for very, well, different reasons. Mr. Fillon has to cope with a lot of financial scandal linked to the relationships of his former job, a member of the parliament, with, private money. Mr. Hamon has a strong problem of legitimacy inside his party, and probably the job will be very difficult for both of them. So if we have Macron and Le Pen, then it will mean that the second round of this election, we will have a cleavage between two parts of the French societies, but this cleavage also exists in many other Western societies. Those who are prepared to support, let's say, a liberal, globalized program, and the others who want to support a nationalist, anti-globalization candidate and political program. So we speak a lot in France of the cleavage between les libéraux, the liberals, and the national populist. And this is going, of course, against a long, long tradition where the cleavage was between the right and the left. And the big question, of course, is if Macron, in particular, is winning the election, will he be able to reshape the political cleavages, which was never possible in the fifth republic? I don't think it would be very easy, and some of my colleagues are going to talk about the parliamentary election, which will come a couple of weeks after the presidential one. But if Macron wins, problem will start for him there. It will be also a big problem for Madame Le Pen to find a prime minister, because she will probably not have the majority in the parliament, but even for Macron, because if he goes too much in the direction of the center-left, he will be accused by the center-right to, not to respect what he said during this campaign, a certain neutrality between the left and the right, and the opposite, if he goes too much in the direction of the center-right. What will be the consequences for Europe? Well, very different, of course, if Le Pen, Macron, or the two other candidates are elected. Let me start with Le Pen. You see, I'm not excluding the possibility of Madame Le Pen to win. I'm sad to say so, but this is my conviction. She has a possibility to win. You remember all what we said about Mr. Trump will never win, Brexit will never win, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe this is also a lesson we draw from these previous experiences in the United States and in Great Britain. Well, if Le Pen wins, of course, no relaunch of the European Union, especially no real possibility to do anything with the new German Chancellor who will be elected after the Bundestag election of September, either Mrs. Merkel or Mr. Schulz. We will have probably a demand from Le Pen to renegotiate first. This is what she's saying in the campaign, the relationships to the EU. And she adds, well, if I see that a referendum is necessary to be organized on the question of staying or leaving, I will organize it. And this is a step forward, a move compared to what she said a year ago, because a year ago she only said that she wants to leave the Eurozone, the Euro. Okay, so now she's talking about the possibility to leave the EU, but it will not be so easy, because when you're looking at the polls, including people who are voting for the Front National, for the far right, they're not particularly in favor of leaving the euro, because they think there would be instability, consequences for their economies, etc. So this is something she will have probably to consider. But it is in her in her discourse. So we'll have a sort of Orban, Orban in a bigger country than Hungary. You know what I mean? That's the difference. If Le Pen wins, Macron, I don't know if some of you are supporting Brexit in this room, but she will not be very tough. She would be very accommodating on the question of Brexit. So. If we are cynical, to a certain extent, it would be the interest of those who are negotiating Brexit in London to have Madame Le Pen, because she will probably not ask for too many constraints, guarantees, etc., etc. Macron, he is probably the candidate who is the most Germany compatible, if I may speak so. He will move in the direction of the reform of the Eurozone, and he probably understands very well that if you want to have a real reform of the Eurozone, France has to, propose guarantees to the German, especially on the question of budgetary deficit. He's talking about multi-speed Europe, but again, this is something which is very much in the air. You probably read the proposal done by Mr. Juncker in his white book. And in Germany, we're talking about multi-speed Europe again. Probably on the question of Brexit, he'll be tough. He will ask guarantees, especially on the financial side, the British contribution. Hamon and Fillon, my impression is that on the European questions or on the European issues, both of them will ask for a sort of statu quo, but no real renegotiation of the treaties, no real step to move forward in the European Union. Of course, different approach of the economy. Fillon is much more liberal. When Hamon will probably ask for a revision of the Maastricht criteria of 1992 on the question of budgetary deficit, etc., because he still believes in a Keynesian economic policy for Europe, not only for France, but for Europe. But this is currently what we can say from this campaign, which is a bit strange because, again, we do not know at all what will be the outcome. So the coming weeks will be very important to observe, and people will have also to think about what they're doing, not only at the second round, but at the first round, right? Because in this presidential election, usually you, at the first round, well, you express your wish, and at the second round, you try to be, well, to express a useful vote, un vote utile, as we said in France. Well, this time, probably a couple of people will try to have a useful vote at the first round of the election if they do not want to have the far right. So let's wait and see.
Thank you so much, and we'll go straight to Dr. Françoise Boutchek.
Well, like Christian, I would like to thank the European Institute for inviting me. And like Christian, I spent many years, probably more than you have, in this institution. And it still feels like home, I have to say, and particularly in the old theater here. I grew up on a farm in Brittany where my brother still runs a dairy farm. A friend of his committed suicide a couple of weeks ago. She was a mother of three children and hung herself in the milking parlor. In 2016 alone, 400 farmers committed suicide, more than one a day, something that's not widely reported in the press or anywhere, unlike the 20 suicides at France Telecom about 8 years ago, I think. Maybe some of you remember that event. For dairy farmers, the end of EU milk quotas means they must produce twice as much to earn what they did 30 years ago. Travailler plus pour gagner pareil, as my brother puts it. So who will French farmers vote for in the presidential elections next month? A recent survey by Cevipof at Sciences Po gives Marine Le Pen around 35% of working farmers' votes. To be sure, a farmer's vote for Le Pen will be largely a protest vote, but much of France is in despair because of sluggish economic growth and high unemployment, prompting widespread disaffection with the political elites who seem disconnected from people's everyday lives. That's the big theme of this presidential election and the election campaigns themselves, where both the most likely candidates to compete for the runoff, Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron, aren't from any mainstream party. I'm not going to predict the outcome of the presidential race. There's plenty of pollsters out there and pundits and bookies already doing that. But for what it's worth, the so-called political expert just can't see Le Pen winning, which is pretty much in line with what all the polls are saying. But we never know. There have been surprises recently. So what's really important to remember, though, is that the presidential race is only the first of a two-stage electoral cycle, as Christian mentioned. The truly decisive election will be the two rounds of parliamentary elections in June. And whoever wins the presidency needs parliament to actually get things done. And even then, history has shown that the streets is often the final arbiter of policy change. So only a Le Pen victory in the election cycle that begins then on April 21st and ends on June 18th, the second one of the parliamentary election, only a Le Pen victory is sure to deliver a sea change to France's economic governance and Europe's future. A victory for either Macron or François Fillon is unlikely to deliver a profound break from the past in terms of governance, the power of the streets, and the future of Europe. A Le Pen victory would be a huge shock, a French exit from the euro that threatens the very existence of the single currency, a referendum on France's EU membership, which could just break up the EU itself, and a referendum on constitutional reform. In contrast, despite their neoliberal Anglo-American undertones, Macron and Fillon's economic and social reforms are unlikely to trigger a French economic boom and eliminate French citizens' long-standing dependency on the state. Both will have to contend with the street, as did even mild reformers in the past. But France will remain at the center of the EU. There's been a media frenzy about the presidential race, some of it a bit myopic, a bit sensationalist. Last week's Economist front page story headline was "The Next French Revolution." And last weekend's Financial Times featured an editorial about France's ailing republic tottering towards meltdown. So look beyond May 7th, second round of the presidential election, for the candidate's capacity to win an absolute majority of seats in the National Assembly in June. Parties must select individual candidates to represent the party in 577 constituencies. Finding credible candidates, local candidates, is going to be a challenge for both Le Pen and her National Front, and for Macron, who has to start from scratch. Macron's En Marche movement lacks a party machine and a grassroots organization. And he has promised to deliver parity and to recruit candidates from civil society. For National Assembly elections, the two-ballot system works differently than for the presidential race, where voters face a binary choice in the runoff race, what political scientist Mike Lewis Beck calls the unity moment. The first round being the diversity moment, when voters can express their true preferences, although Christian seems to imply that even in the first round, people are going to vote useful strategically. But in contrast, then, to the presidential race, where the second choice is this binary choice between the two finalists, in contrast, to qualify for the runoff race in National Assembly elections, candidates need the support of at least 12.5% of their constituency's registered voters. That's not votes cast, it's registered voters, which means a higher barrier than 12.5%. So traditionally, the mainstream parties then on the left and on the right make strategic pacts in the second round. The best placed candidate goes on to fight the seat on behalf of the alliance. However, this district-level coordination doesn't always work. And in some constituencies, three or even four candidates compete in the runoff. In 2012, for instance, there were 34 of those constituencies where there were what we call triangulaire, so three candidates fighting the second round. And these triangulaire, or even quadrangulaire, with four candidates, are more likely to happen in 2017, given the fragmented and polarized state of the party system. So what does that all mean? Well, it will probably get very messy, with a high probability that there won't be any party with an absolute majority, unless the socialist and Macron's movement regroup, or the conservatives manage to heal their differences. So a new period of cohabitation cannot be ruled out either. So without a majority party in government, there won't be a clear mandate for any of the serious reforms that France so desperately needs to unplug the dysfunctional labor market or get economic growth up to meaningful levels. And that likely means the street will continue to have the final say well after all that balloting is done in June. Not good for France and not good for Europe. And not good for those French farmers in the deepest of deep despair. So my brother says he's had enough of all these politicians who don't have a clue about the real world, and he can't wait to retire next year. Thank you.
Finally done, Pete.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you to the LSE and my fellow panelists. As they always say when they speak last, everything has been said, but not by me. So I'll try not to repeat too much of what we've said, most of which I agree with. I mean, looking at the French election, you might say, what a farce, if it were not so serious. And I strongly agree with Sarah's opening remarks. I think this is the election that counts most for the future of Europe this year, in many ways more important than the Brexit referendum or the Trump election or tomorrow's Dutch election, and I think you could argue even more important than September in the Federal Republic because of what is at stake with France and its future. This really is going to matter. And of course, much of the focus is inevitably on Marine Le Pen. I mean, we all remember what happened in 2002, which was really a shock, and of course led to the famous second round when the choice was between the liar and the fascist. this time round, everybody has been predicting that Marine will be probably first, but certainly in the second round. And she has, to give her credit, she has done a remarkable job in transforming the image of the Front National. When I first started to cover Europe, I would find it very difficult to find anybody in France who would admit to supporting the National Front. But over successive years, it has become more and more respectable among what you might call the elite, even in Paris, to admit that they do have some sympathy for the Front National. And she has clearly been following a very intelligent strategy of gradually pushing aside the centre-right party to try and take over from the main centre-right party. She's probably doing it a bit earlier than she originally planned. I did once interview her, and she gave me the strong impression that the election she really had in mind was 2022, not 2017. But then, of course, the disarray in both her country and, of course, in the Republican Party has perhaps brought forward her agenda. And, you know, she is still doing remarkably well, and we've heard about the polls and so on. Yes, of course it is true to say that it is much harder for Marine Le Pen to win the French presidential election than it was for the Brexit victory last June or arguably for Donald Trump in November because of the two-round system. But I think Christian is quite right to say it would be wrong to conclude that it is impossible. I think in this day and age, and given the way the polls have gone and given what's happened to the candidates, particularly Fillon, almost anything is possible in France, and I would definitely not exclude the possibility of a Marine Le Pen victory. Obviously, to most of us, I'm sure in this room, but certainly most of us on this side of the channel, Emmanuel Macron is a far more attractive candidate. He's more pro-EU, which doesn't necessarily fill this side of the channel with enthusiasm, but he is more liberal, He's more go-ahead. He's more, I think, pro-British. His platform has quite a lot of vagueness about it. We know what he actually believes in, but actually there is quite a lot of muddiness in his platform. And of course, as Françoise and Christine have both said, he doesn't have an established party. En Marche really barely exists. And I think the other point I would make about Macron, the two things I would say about Macron, first of all, he loves coming over here, and he loves actually coming to see people like The Economist and The Financial Times. The Financial Times is the sensationalist one, of course. The Economist is a more carefully balanced publication. But I did once say to him, I don't really believe that being endorsed by The Financial Times and The Economist will do you any good at all in France. And I think there is something in that theory. He's trying to pretend he's an outsider, but actually he is the classic insider, you know, a pure product of the French elite, of ENA, of Rothschild Bank. And I think that when it comes to the next month or two of campaign, that could be a weakness for him. And it's one of the reasons why I wouldn't write off Le Pen, because although Macron looks good and in most polls will beat her, I think when it comes to the toughness of a campaign, remember he's never been elected to anything, the fact that he is a strong insider and was associated with François Hollande, for whom he worked first of all in the Élysée and then as economy minister, I think those things could turn out to be weaknesses. The other thing I'd say about the candidates, though, is I would not write off Fillon. I would write off the others. I think Hamon really doesn't have a chance. But I think, despite what's happened to Fillon, which has been rather remarkable over the last 2 months, many of us wrote off Fillon in the primary. We all said it wasn't going to be won by Fillon. It was a contest between Juppé and Sarkozy. Fillon is a tough fighter. I expected him, perhaps last week, to say, now it's time to stand down. But he's clearly decided he's not going to do that. He's going to carry on fighting hard. And as the other two candidates are exposed to more public view, I wouldn't write off the possibility that Fillon might sneak into the second round after all. So it is not a two-horse race. It is still a three-horse race. I'll finish in a moment with four questions, but I do want to very much reinforce the big point that Françoise has just made about the National Assembly elections. I think in this country, and indeed in other countries, we've tended to focus exclusively on the presidential election. And it is true to say that French presidents have a remarkable amount of power. As we have repeatedly seen, they have the ability to rule by decree, and this was a system set up by de Gaulle. But we have also experienced two periods of cohabitation under Mitterrand and Chirac, and in both cases, getting anything done became extremely hard. And in those cases, it was a cohabitation between a mainstream party of the centre-left and a majority in the Assembly of the centre-right, or the other way around. In this case, if it is either Macron or Fillon, it will be a president who doesn't have roots in either party. I mean, Macron does have roots in the Socialist Party, but he's regarded by many socialists as a traitor because of what he's done. So I think forming a government and getting any reforms done will be much harder than people might have realized when they look at the French presidency and think it's an all-powerful position. And I think that that's something we should be writing more about in the press. My four questions to finish on, and I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to answer them all, but I will try and put them on the table. Is France reformable? Can France take back its role in the Franco-German relationship, which has been the motor for the European project? What is its overall approach to the European Union? And how will it handle Brexit? First question, is France reformable? The answer to that ought to be, in principle, yes. But I must say, I still have my doubts. We have seen many, many presidents and prime ministers who've promised to reform France. Chirac, Juppé, Sarkozy, even Hollande. And I can tell you, having recently been in Berlin, that in Berlin they are still deeply sceptical about the ability of France to reform itself. And they hear promises from both Fillon and Macron in particular, but they then point to the problems that Françoise also pointed to, the famous French street. And the fact that there may be a problem about the National Assembly, I think, will make it even harder. So I think it would be legitimate to be doubtful about the ability of any of the candidates to bring about substantial reform in France. That partly answers my second question, what about the Franco-German relationship? I think a France that is continuing to underperform economically will be one which produces a continuing lopsided Franco-German relationship. It is true that Angela Merkel is looking weaker today than she has done for some time, and it's possible, nobody knows again. It's possible she may not be Chancellor after September. But I think that in terms particularly of the euro, but also in terms of the European Union more generally, Germany will continue to be by far the dominant partner in this relationship. And I think that will happen even if Macron is president. The one thing I would say about Macron is, yes, of course, he is the one that the Germans would like to win, but his ideas for how to govern the euro do not go down very well in the German finance ministry, and I think that will continue to be true whoever is the German chancellor. And even if Schulz said, well, I like these ideas, there are plenty of other people in Europe, including in the Netherlands, Austria and Finland, who don't. So it won't be easy. And I think that partly answers my third question, which is, what about their overall approach to the EU? Of course, Macron is the most pro-EU of the three main candidates. Fillon is a clear intergovernmentalist, doesn't really like Brussels, is rather, in my view, too fond of Vladimir Putin. And Le Pen, as we've heard, hates both the EU and the euro. But I think that answers the question about the candidates. But in general, I think whoever wins, I don't think France is suddenly going to turn around and become much more enthusiastic about the EU than it was before. I think there's still going to be difficulties between France and Brussels. And finally, I finish with my fourth question, since we are in London and we are talking about the implications for Europe. What does this French presidential election mean for Brexit? And I think here I slightly part company with Christian. I think whoever wins is going to be difficult for Britain in different ways. I think the rest of the EU is going to be difficult for Britain anyway. This is a self-inflicted wound caused by the inner travails of the Conservative Party. The British Prime Minister is making it worse, not better, by making it clear that she wants to go for a hard Brexit and treating anybody who even implies that actually there might be something to be said for trying to stay in the single market as if they're terrible Ramoners who are trying to reverse the result of the last June's referendum. So I think the negotiation is going to be an extremely difficult, tough one for Britain. Anyway, Macron is obviously more fond of Britain, but I think as president, especially without a strong majority in the National Assembly, he will not want to be too kind to the British. He will subscribe to the general view of the 27 that it is important to establish the principle that it is more uncomfortable to be outside the European Union than to be inside the European Union, and that will inform his approach to the negotiation. Fillon, we know he has a Welsh wife, but it doesn't seem to be turning him into a great Britophile, no matter how much money he has paid her over the years. And where I do part company, my final point with Christiane is I'm not convinced that Marine Le Pen would go out of her way to be terribly accommodating to the British. Of course, she would share some of the British government's views about the European Union and the euro and so on, but she is very hostile to free trade. That is her sort of calling card almost. And I think if she were to be president, the European Union would be in such an existential crisis over its whole future that the mood of the 27 countries, including the mood of France, would be one in which simply rescuing the project will become the top priority and being nice to the British would be the bottom priority. So I don't think it will turn suddenly into sweetness and light in the Brexit negotiations.
Well, thank you to those excellent and thought-provoking interventions. We'll turn it to Q&A. I mean, I'm sure that for those of you who'd hope to come here tonight and experience a bit less existential angst than you did in 2016, you've not been given that, but you've been given some very, very interesting and provocative and informed views on France and Europe and the future of both. So we now open it to Q&A. Luckily, all our speakers have agreed to take questions. I will take a group of questions. I put them together, but if you could all raise your hand and then stand up when you ask your question and just say your name and your affiliation before asking. There's a question there at the back, that the gentleman in the pink T-shirt.
Hi there, Zach
Fagan,
University of Kent.
Oh,
right up there. For Mr. Pete, I was just wondering if you could go a little bit more into depth on your second
If you could go a little bit more into depth on your second question, if possible, to explain a little bit more for those of us who are less familiar with regards to what Mr. Macron's views on the Eurozone and projects for reforming it are, why you think it might not necessarily go down with the German position, and also vis-a-vis those other countries that you mentioned. Where is the discord most likely going to come from?
And now it's the gentleman in the pink T-shirt.
Good evening. Thank you. No, I had one question with regards to parliamentarism. It has been on the news in France that maybe we should turn to a more parliamentarian system. We are in a situation where, in fact, it's not comparable to cohabitation in 1996, 1997, and the rest, because it's not that there's going to be a majority in the opposition, but there'll be no majority whatsoever in the National Assembly. If this happens, the Constitution is not made to deal with it. Politicians in France are not made to deal with it. The media is not made to deal with it. So I want to have your point of view on what it is that we can do. Is parliamentarism the answer, or is there something out there that we haven't thought of that can be a solution? Thank you.
Thank you. And this question, if you can get the microphone here, in the middle here.
Thank you, John Palmer. My question follows on from the second and third of John Peet's questions, in a way, and one of the questions we've already heard, and that is the Franco-German relationship. I'm in particular wondering what the implications would be if there is a change of government in Berlin, which could take two forms, a new grand coalition, or it could take the form of what seems to be emerging, an SPD, Die Linke, Green coalition. That would, it seemed to me, appeal in many ways, even to a centrist like Macron, in terms of creating a more favorable macro climate for the reforms he wants. Is that true, and how far do his plans depend upon a change in the finance ministry, which many Germans think may be coming?
Thank you. And it's a final question, if you can pass the microphone. Oh, sorry, no. There was a one here just in front. Final question for this round.
I'm Martin Cameron, just your average cab driver. I just wanted to know if any of the potential French presidential candidates would be give any succour or encouragement to what we've heard from Nicola Sturgeon and the Scottish Independence, whether they would, you know, be happy to have Scotland as part of the EU after a positive result for Scotland.
Thank you. So I'll turn to the panel now. Christian, do you want to start?
Yes. Thank you very much for the question. Yes, a couple of answers. First of all, your question about Emmanuel Macron's view. Well, he would like to have more autonomy, more institutional autonomy for the Eurozone, and his objective is to have a budget for the Eurozone. He's thinking about having special institutions, and he has not answered the question, do we have to create new institutions, which goes probably against what the public wants, you know, because more institutions means less visibility, etc. Or do we have to use the current institutions of the EU? But he also knows that to move in this direction, there is no choice with the German. They will never accept a Eurozone budget if France is not respecting more the criteria for public deficit and for public debt, and especially public deficit. So he's very much in favor of respecting the 3% target. Franco-German relationships, it's very interesting the way you talk about it, John, and the people in the audience, because you just concentrated on the economic aspects. When you look at the debate in France, we immediately introduce also another dimension, which is security. And this is something where I see a possible complementarity with the German government, because obviously there is a debate among the German elites political elites. I'm not sure there is a support in the society. This is something different, but among the elites doing more on security, doing more on defense, doing more on counterterrorism. And my impression is that France would like to play this card, you know, because this is the card where France knows that she could have a form of input, leadership, compared to the Germans. I have not a theory, but an explanation about French activism in military terms in the last 5 years. It very much corresponds to the financial crisis of the Eurozone. So it was interesting. This is what I call leadership de substitution in French, you know. We know that there is one sector where the Germans will not take the lead for obvious historical reasons. This is military and defense. So we take this card. And probably thinking about Franco-German relationships in the future will need to include this dimension. Scotland independence, you will not find any official statement, but my impression is that there is no big support among the French politicians, because if Scotland is asking for independence, it will mean another crisis in the EU, you know. To a certain extent, governments, diplomats, they are very conservative. They like stability, you know. And I don't think there is a real support independence processes inside the EU member states. The same for Catalonia.
Françoise. Yes. So, Zach, I think, from Kent over there. Yes, and there are connections between two of the questions on the Franco-German relationship, so maybe I will just take them together and add a little bit more to what Christian just said. So how would Macron handle it? Well, in fact, I don't see a great deal of difference should it be Fillon or Macron when it comes to the Franco-German relationship. I think it will continue to be what we call the motor of European integration, especially without the UK. So you are left with two major countries. Although it's interesting what happened last week at the Versailles summit, where suddenly now Spain and Italy, you know, there's a sort of this rearrangement almost of, you know, preempting perhaps what might happen. But I don't see a big difference there. The Franco-German relationship, though, it's, I think, no matter who, ruling out Le Pen, let me just talk about Fillon or Macron there. There are different views, or especially about the Eurozone and how to integrate more monetary union. And the German, so the French, and I believe Macron, and particularly Macron, they would like to actually have a treasury. A ministry of finance for the Eurozone countries, a treasury, and possibly even a vision towards some kind of fiscal federalism eventually, in a long way forward. Whereas Germany, certainly not the current German government and finance minister, they don't want to have anything to do with that. They don't want euro bonds. They don't want any mutualization of the debt. So there are quite different views on how to proceed in the future with the Eurozone crisis. So that could be problematic moving forward. On cohabitation, yes, you are absolutely right. You are kind of asking us to speculate about what might happen, and it's just so difficult to actually anticipate what the different scenarios might be. But I think the second cohabitation, when with Chirac and Jospin, the socialists, didn't they have also support from the Greens? And then eventually there were four ministers from the Green party in the cabinet. They eventually withdrew their support. So it's not impossible that a similar kind of scenario might arise. Scottish independence, well, that's a whole new ball game now. So if this is a big if, so there is a referendum and for some reason they vote yes for independence, which would be a big change because, you know, 2 years ago they voted, I think 55% said no to independence, 45% said yes. And it doesn't look like there is any change. In fact, opinion polls, if we can believe them, I think show even more reluctance towards independence. So, but should it happen, then Scotland is a new country. It has to apply for EU membership, just like any other countries, and that's a long process. True. Because it will have already acquired all the, what we call the acquis communautaire, all the body of existing laws as being part of the UK. So we could, assuming the other 27 countries want to, are ready to take it in as a new member, that could be quite quick, the sort of the readmission or the accession of Scotland into the EU, but that's a lot of ifs and yes. Somehow.
John?
Well, the first question was aimed at me, but actually I think it's been answered by both my colleagues. The only thing I would say to you is I would strongly recommend a book that came out at the end of last year called The Euro and the Battle of Ideas, which Bruno Meyer, James and Landau. And what it really brought home was that this is not just a question of particular individuals, Macron, Schäuble, Fillon, and so on. There is a strong streak of philosophical difference between the French establishment and the German establishment about the right way to run the euro. And whenever issues like a minister of finance, a eurozone budget, euro bonds, a gouvernement économique, whenever all those issues are put on the table by anybody from France, the feeling in Berlin is what this is really about is picking the pockets of the German taxpayer. And I think that will continue. The only circumstance in which that might change, to try and answer John Palmer's question, is if there were a red-red-green coalition in Berlin. I think a grand coalition led by Schulz would probably still not change the fundamental way of thinking in Berlin. A red-red-green coalition might well do, and that really would be a sort of overturning of the order in the European Union, but I think it's unlikely to happen. And I think it is also worth saying that behind Mr. Schäuble stand several other countries. I mentioned one or two of them, the Netherlands, Austria and Finland in particular, who would also be extremely unhappy with the proposals for a eurozone budget and so on, because they are just as hostile to a transfer union as Germany is. So I would continue to see big differences over the euro, even with a President Macron continuing. The parliamentarism and so on, I do sometimes wonder whether the Fifth Republic is the best designed form of democracy. De Gaulle had a different vision, but really, if we get a second time, the choice of president being the one that kept out the National Front, you wonder whether this is the right way forward. But then changing the French constitution, it's very difficult. So we will see how it goes. Lastly, on Scotland, yes, of course, the old alliance did exist between Scotland and France, but I think it's right to say, no, it doesn't really anymore. I don't think France is strongly supportive of the notion of Scottish independence. I think if it happened, France would be perfectly willing to accommodate Scotland in the European Union. I think the problem for Scotland is not Paris, it is Madrid. And the Spanish government hasn't even recognized Kosovo. So I think Spain would make life for an applicant country very difficult if it happened.
Thank you. We have time for another round of questions. The lady in blue there, please.
On Monday, Le Parisien had wrote that Manuel Valls is about to support Emmanuel Macron. Well, we don't know yet whether this is true or not, but if that was, if it were to happen, and if it's true that about 40% of socialists are behind Manuel Valls, would that mean that these votes would go automatic, would also go to Emmanuel Macron, and would that also mean that he could actually win a majority later in the parliamentary elections, yes or no? Or would that mean in terms of his promise of parity, would he then have to back up that as well?
Thank you. And if you could all please stand up and just say your name and affiliation when you ask a question. There at the back, please.
Thank you very much. Anthony Frost, Team Global. What effect will the Dutch elections have on the French elections, bearing in mind that the far right will probably come top of the polls in Holland? Thank you.
Thank you. And then on the balcony, there's a question here. In the yes, over here, two next to each other, so if you can both ask a question, one after the other.
Hi, this is Tesh. I work for a fintech. My question is there any note of positivity from this? If you get Le Pen, then we know possibly what happens there. If we get Macron, then it seems like we're in a possible state of stasis. And I obviously voted Remain, but that isn't to say that the EU is perfect. There needs to be a big discussion about this whole project. So what is the positive note to come out of any of these two sides?
Hi, it's Sarah, former reader of French and just a sort of general Francophile. There's been a lot of talk this evening about...
Could you stand?
Sorry.
Can you Hello. Stand up?
We see. Hi. Do you mind if I sit back down? Just
no, better if you
crouch.
Stand up. For the
okay, fine.
Sorry about that.
Hi, yeah. So former reader of French, general Francophile. There's been a lot of talk this evening about the sort of financial economic implications if we're sort of looking at this from a policy perspective. I wondered, though, what you thought the implications would be for questions that will be on the forefront, I think, of many voters' minds on national identity, immigration, defence, security, issues which, of course, I think drive a lot of the populist views, not just in France, but across Europe. So it'd be good, I think, to understand what you thought... what the three main candidates, or two, depending on your view, will be saying on those issues, and how you think that will impact on the result, if indeed you do believe it will. Thanks.
Thank you. And then one final question at the balcony. There's a quiz hand raised there in the back. Yeah, thank you. Could stand up, please.
Anthony Dimitriou, the Treasury. I just wanted to ask the extent to which you feel like the next French president, whoever it ends up being, will be influential in the Brexit negotiations relative to someone like Michel Barnier, the Commission's chief negotiator.
Thank you.
To
what extent?
In the Brexit negotiations.
Right.
As opposed to Michel Barnier.
I heard the question.
Okay, well,
that's fine.
Could you repeat it, please?
Could you repeat
your question?
To what extent do you think that the next president will be able to influence the Brexit negotiations relative to Michel Barnier?
We'll take answers now, because otherwise the panelists might feel rather overwhelmed with all these excellent questions. So we'll start with John here, and of course you can feel free to pick and choose if you... You know, don't all have to answer all the questions.
No. Well, I might leave the question about Valls to one of my colleagues. Although I'd be surprised if he comes out openly in support of Macron. Pisani Ferry has done, but nobody in the top of the Socialist Party has done yet. So I'll leave somebody else to comment on that. The Dutch election, I'm not sure it will have a big influence. I'm actually not sure Wilders is going to come top now either. But even if he does come top, I am told by everybody in the Netherlands, if you can believe it, that there is no chance of him being part of the next Dutch government, which anyway, it being the Netherlands, will probably take 12 months to form. But yes, of course, there is a sort of continuity in element of sort of populists doing very well. You know, there's you can sort of bookmark Brexit, Trump, Wilders, and then possibly Le Pen. They do sort of feed a little bit on each other, but I don't think in this case it's going to make a huge difference to Le Pen. Anything positive? Well, I'm afraid the mood just isn't very positive at the moment anywhere. I do think myself that partly, but not only because of Brexit, the European Union should be having a much more serious debate about the project and its future. I think the loose talk we've had about multi-speeds is potentially encouraging, because I like the idea of a multi-speed Europe. Indeed, if I can advertise, next week I have a special report coming out in The Economist in favour of a multi-speed, multi-tier Europe, a much more ambitious one than was talked about in Versailles, one that might also include non-members of the European Union. I'm not sure whether it will happen, but I think it would be good if it did, and maybe when we've gone through all these elections and we have a new leadership established, we should be encouraging that debate. I don't think Britain will be able to participate in it, unfortunately. And identity, yes, I think my comment on identity is I do think that issues around migration and Islam in particular are going to be difficult for Macron and positive for Le Pen, just as we've seen with Wilders in the Netherlands. I don't know what will happen after the election, whether that will produce a big change. I suppose it depends who wins, basically, and if I'm assuming it will be Macron. But I think France does still have problems in both those areas to address, and I hope that will happen. And finally, on Brexit negotiations, I do think that in the initial stages, the people who count are going to be Donald Tusk and Didier Suess, his advisor in the council, to some extent Guy Verhofstadt, who everyone will find a pain, and clearly Michel Barnier and others in the commission. But in the closing stages of the Brexit negotiations, I think experience tells me that it will go back to the member states, and the member states will be the ones that really decide at the tough last-minute issues, whether Britain really owes the EU 60 billion euros or not, or whether, as some people in this country think, actually the EU owes us 9 billion euros, or even I heard yesterday the EU owes us 90 billion euros. That sort of issue will not be decided in Brussels, it will be decided in national capitals. So yes, the French president will play a big role.
Thank you. Françoise?
Manuel Valls, Macron. Oh. I think I'll let Christian with a little bit, as his pulse more on perhaps the inner, the dynamics within the Socialist Party than I do. But it's not impossible. It's true he has been very anti-Macron because, well, he was hoping that, you know, he was going to be the one, and that the Socialist Party would select, and so that would require regrouping, as I said in my presentation, of already the forces behind Macron and the Socialist forces. Somehow there would have to be some kind of reconciliation, I think, in order for Manuel Valls to be head of government, say, in a Macron presidency. Anthony, the Dutch election effects. Not much else to add to what John already said. What's interesting about the Wilders, and I agree, I think the Wilders is, he's taboo anyway for any other parties in the Netherlands. They are not going to form a coalition with that party, and so it probably will be a three- or four-party coalition looking at the fragmentation of the party system, and if it's the current prime minister who finds a couple of coalition partners, they'll probably have to make a coalition with the Green Party as well, I believe, according to the how the numbers work out. So it's going to be, as you said, a very long process of government formation. And Wilders, well, he's, you know, Le Pen's chum in the European Parliament. They managed to form a parliamentary group last year. Once a defector from the Conservative group left and joined UKIP. So suddenly, I think it was UKIP or I forget. Anyway, they had just sufficient number to meet.
She left UKIP.
She left UKIP. And then so they were able to form a parliamentary group because they now had seven representatives from at least seven countries and that. So, and that is why they've had the resources to actually do more than they normally can in the European Parliament, because if you are a formal parliamentary group, you have access to money and all that. So there is an existing relationship between those two, but in terms of the national election in Holland, in the Netherlands, I'm not sure really what the impact would be on France. I don't think there was going to be much of a difference in the relationship. Any positive, I'm afraid? Well, as you heard me say, I don't feel very positive at the moment, and it is hard to find any positivity in the current climate. So I'm afraid I can't offer any hope there. Maybe we are being just too pessimistic. I mean, my husband, who is in the crowd, always says, "We'll get along. This is Britain. He's not British, okay? You know, they manage somehow to turn themselves around, and he doesn't seem to be seeing all the difficulties that I see with Brexit happening. Financial, economic implications, national identity. There were a lot of things mentioned in your question, and I'm not sure what your national identity question related to. Was it to the campaign, or how is it going to pan out later on?
Defence and security, which I suppose it was a bit of a pointed question. There you go. Hello.
Yep.
I won't repeat all of that because that will be even more awkward. I suppose it was a pointed question because my view is that I think that those particular policy areas are driving, you know, the voters sort of down certain avenues potentially, and I think that, you know, the three or two candidates, depending on which way you look at it, will be using those particular policy areas to sort of, you know, hone their voters down the avenue that of their choosing. So I suppose the broader question is, to what extent do you think those specific areas of policy will impact on the result of the election?
Right. Well, national identity is really only being articulated by Marine Le Pen, really, in her rhetoric, in her narrative, and that. And even she's toning that down somewhat now when she's trying to broaden her appeal. And in terms of the effect, whoever gets into power on policy, I guess it would mean immigration policy. How is that going to affect immigration policy? Well, there's already a state of emergency in France. How much more difficult can it be? That's it. I don't think your question was really specific enough for me to give you a specific answer, if you know what I mean. the question of national identity is very difficult to get, you know, to get into and to really anticipate how it might pan out in terms of specific policies, because it means different things to different people.
Precisely. Yeah.
Okay, I think we move on so other people also have it. I mean, I'm all for dialogue, but Christian, do you have?
Yeah. Well, I'm starting with your question about Manuel Valls. Well, officially, he's not supporting Emmanuel Macron. In practice, it's a bit more complicated. In practice, of course, he would prefer the election of Macron than the election of Hamon. And we had some sign. There is a twinning system, you know, when you want to become a candidate, and some of the very close ministers of Valls decided to support Macron. It's the case of Monsieur Le Drian, minister for defense. Well, probably the people around Valls, they think that it would be the only way to reshape the Socialist Party in the direction they want to. Yeah. If it's Hamon, of course, they will not be able to reshape the party, and this is what they want for the future. So, yes, they don't support officially, but they would prefer the victory of Macron than Valls. Dutch election, it's interesting because Netherlands, which is a very close country from France, is a country about which the French do not know anything. No. And yes, it's true for the Benelux countries in general, even Belgium, you know, which is a very close country. When if you ask French people about Belgian politics, I know it's complicated, but they will not be able to tell you anything. And I'm struck that in the press we have articles now about the Dutch elections, explaining the Dutch electoral system, etc. I have been invited myself to a couple of things organized by the Dutch embassy, etc. I don't want to say that it would have an influence on the French election, but of course there is an interest, and if Wilders wins this election, the one who will use it will be Madame Le Pen, of course. She will probably articulate the discourse like, you know, after Brexit, now it's Wilders, and the next will be me, right? They have very, very close relationships, both leaders, Marine Le Pen and Geert Wilders. Brexit, I'm Michel Barnier. I very much agree with John. We don't have to overestimate the role of those special representatives. At the end, you know, the decision will be taken by the member states and decided by the European Council. So. German election and French elections are much more important than the personality of Mr. Barnier, which I like, who I like a lot. He's a respectable person, but we don't have to overestimate his power. National identity, of course, it's present in the election. EU migration, all these questions refer to national identity, but this is not a particularity of France. It's the case in many EU member states today. Macron tried to use a bit the argument in strategic terms. I don't know if you saw his interview in Algeria. He gave an interview to the Algerian TV a couple of weeks ago, where he said that the French colonization in Algeria was a crime against humanity. Of course, immediately there was strong reaction from the right, you know. But he had to stop it because he needs, well, that's his problem. He needs votes from the left and votes from the right. But I suspect that if he did it, at the end it was a kind of mistake, but if he did it, it's because he thought it was a way to attract the votes of the 3 million French citizens with North African origins. You know, it was probably that he had in mind. Positive note. Well, I think the only positive note, and it's not neglectable, is everything what happens now help us to understand what's the main reason of the EU crisis? And the main reason is not the problem of the policies, functional reasons, you know. The main reasons have to do with identity, with community feeling, etc. And it's very important for us political scientists, because if you are familiar with EU studies, for decades we very much concentrate the problem of the EU on governance, public policy, etc. When now what we have to do is political philosophy, you know, come back on the normative questions. This is probably the way to understand the real crisis of the EU. I'm not convinced by arguments, you know, you just have to just need to have efficient public policies and in the EU, and you're going to relaunch the machine. No. The case of the French farmers is an excellent case. We know they get a lot of money from the EU. This is not creating support, you know. So let's try to think about the normative questions. When we are dealing with the EU crisis, so that's the positive thing. We know more, I think, about the real causes of the crisis than a couple of years ago.
Thank you so much. We will have time for just two more questions. Lady there at the back, and then the panelists. There's a microphone coming.
Hi, my name is Miranda. I'm a master's student at UCL, and I had a question about what your thoughts are on voter turnout for this election, and if the alterity that's felt between the political elite in France and the quote-unquote daily person, if that will lead to a protest vote or even potentially a lack of voting, which would have obvious consequences like we saw in the U.S. election. So would these feelings of alterity result in a lack of voting even more so than a protest vote?
Thank you. And a question here, please.
Thank you. Ines von Weitershausen, I'm a member of staff here at LSE, and I would like to pick up on that notion that you brought up, Christian, about the importance of security in all of this, and also how that might impact on the French-German relationship. Could you elaborate a little bit on the respective candidates' positions towards issues such as, you know, a cooperation with Germany, towards Russia, towards, you know, the creation, we don't speak of common army, obviously, but, you know, a common procurement and these sorts of issues. Could you be a little bit more explicit there? Thank you.
And then I know there's a lot of hands. It's great that there's so many questions for our excellent panelists, but unfortunately we can't stay all night. So, but I will exploit my position as chair and ask a question. And that's just given that you all put a not improbable probability on Le Pen winning, I'm interested in knowing how much constraint the National Assembly can put on her, given that cohabitation is, you know, very likely in terms of the relation with Euro, so specifically Eurozone membership and membership of the EU. So is there, what are the powers of the National Assembly to resist some of her policy proposals there? And let's start with Christian here and then François and then end with Jean-Pierre.
First question on protest. I'm sure a certain number of people are not going to vote, but the participation rate will probably be high, and this is a characteristic of presidential elections in France. People go voting. In general, we vote more in French than in France in the election than we do in the average EU member state, but in particular for presidential elections. So we are talking about 4 million people who said currently that they're not going to vote, but this is 10% of the electorate. So it's not a significant a number. Security. Well, this is the question, of course, of the European defense and security policy again. And it has to do with resources, of course. The French will have the project to reach the target of 2%. You know, it's the famous target which has been set up by NATO. And they hope that the Germans are going to improve also the resources. Well, we saw in 2015 and 16, I think, an increase of the budget of the Bundeswehr. So, this idea that we have to go in this direction, and of course the argument is, and I'm not sure it's 100% convincing, but we don't know now with Trump what we can expect from, let's say, the security guarantee from the US. So we have an opportunity, a window of opportunity, to move forward again. The problem is that you don't need only Germany. You know, you need other countries as well. So with the Brits, it's interesting because the official statement in Paris and in even Hollande said that clearly in an interview in Le Monde recently. They said, well, we're going to find an ad hoc agreement with the UK to continue a good cooperation in security. But you don't need only Great Britain, you need some others. So there's a lot of expectation regarding Italy and Spain, and a certain sadness regarding Poland, because when PO was at power, there were big expectations that they could be a good partner to progress on defense and security policy. Well, now with peace, of course, situation is quite different. That's it.
So Miranda, turnout. Actually, I think I'm going to disagree with Christian. I think there is a risk this time that perhaps absenteeism might be higher than normal. I think I read a poll somewhere predicting perhaps as high as 32% yes. Non-participation.
Yes, but that means 70% people voting. So.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the other element might be a lot of spoiled ballots and blank votes, because I think the French, in some parts of French society, there's a strong feeling of a duty to vote, to exercise your democratic right rather than just staying home. And so voting blank is actually a strategy that many voters use. So perhaps, and I don't think there are a lot of studies of, you know, sort of comparative studies of spoiled ballots across different countries to see if there is any kind of trends or patterns. But I think that might be the case this time for the second round. The importance of security, yes, echoing what Christian just said about defense spending and the USA, as the US government has for a long time been saying that Europe should carry a higher load of the pay, a higher burden to finance its security. And of course, with Brexit, with the UK out of, where did that question come from? Yes, right. With the UK out of the of Europe, and that's, you know, with France is the only other nuclear power. So the dynamic might change, although, you know, it's quite possible that that cooperation will continue even with the UK outside of the Union in terms of security and defense. And I think that's it.
Thank you. John?
And the Assembly Nationale.
Yes, of course. The power of the National Assembly under the scenario of a Le Pen presidency. On a particular, I didn't quite catch whether it was...
EU, so Eurozone right. membership and European Union membership.
Right. And so should she want to go ahead with calling a referendum on...
Is there any constraints on her?
Well, if she
assuming
wants...
Assuming she doesn't have a majority in the
that's
National Assembly, yeah, are there any constraints
she has constraints
on her?
Anyway, right?
No, she can call a referendum, but it's advisory. Is there any constraints in terms of...
She needs the. She would need an extraordinary majority of both houses of parliament, I believe, to have a referendum. Do we have somebody here who can answer the question? Is that what you were? I believe that that's going to be a really major.
It might be a question, doesn't it? If she does win, that might become a question.
I mean, my understanding is she. I think the president has the power to call a referendum.
You know, certainly that.
But clearly,
but
the
advisory.
Assembly and indeed the Senate would have to approve of any legislation to withdraw from the European Union or to withdraw from the euro. And just as we've seen in this country, getting legislative approval for some of these things isn't always automatic. And
well,
in
but
this
not
case,
that hard.
Theresa May has a majority in the Commons, although she doesn't have one in the Lords.
Yeah.
But I think Le Pen would find it difficult.
Yeah.
To do either of those things in practice. I think that's absolutely true. And just a quick two other comments on... One comment on turnout. I mean, I'm not sure what I believe about turnout, but I think it may be affected, particularly in the second round, by what the choice is. If it's Fillon and Le Pen, I think many socialists might say, well, you know, we're not really sure. You know, Fillon wants to slash the state. He wants to sack 500,000 civil servants or whatever his latest number is. We don't really like, and he's very, very Catholic, very right-wing. We don't really like him, whereas Le Pen's platform is a little bit more left-wing in a way. So that it's a difficult choice for them. And I think in some ways you could argue that some centre-right voters will find it difficult to choose between Macron and Le Pen. So some of those people may choose not to vote at all. I think that is, and it's one of the reasons why I still think there is a risk of a Le Pen victory, although probably it's I hope, still not going to happen. And on security, I think this is going to be an important subject, and it is an important issue for Brexit, because the fact is that if Europe wishes to have a stronger security presence, stronger defence presence, stronger role in the world, then, frankly, Europe needs the UK. And we know that the close cooperation in defence in Europe is not between France and Germany, it is between France and Britain. And that, I think, it is in both sides are interested in keeping that going. St Malo, Lancaster House, you know, the aircraft carrier, everything they do together. Cooperation between France and Germany will also mushroom, but the fact is that the Germans still are a little bit wary of committing to overseas military operations. They're not very enthusiastic about that sort of stuff. There is some talk about whether Germany should acquire a nuclear weapon, but the Germans still have some pacifist instincts, which I think make it harder for them to work closely with France, whereas the French and the British work very closely together. And my view is that I hope one part of the Brexit negotiations will produce some kind of pragmatic arrangement whereby Britain remains closely involved in European defence. And I think both sides recognise that that is in everybody's interests.
Thank you so much. And please join me in thanking the panel. Thank you to everyone here in the audience who participated. And thank you.